stand to wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burning slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, but we as a people can turn this around." Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com, and catch the live stream from home base. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream from that location also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That's in the Black Belt. And listen to the live stream there also, or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or an auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there, full of new content, new exciting podcasts of several of the new programs on Time for Awakening, and always interesting articles on the site. And the podcast you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put it in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, a special occasion tonight on the Sunday edition of Time for Awakening. We're in open form this evening. So any of your calls, anything on your mind, give us a call. A wide open form. Usually Sundays is kind of guest orientated, but we always enjoy having an exchange with the listening audience. So it's open forum this evening on Time for Awakening. You can get involved with the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-er. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening and Sunday evening here in the city of Philadelphia at 7:14. We're in open forum. It's kind of a rare Sunday occasion that because we usually have guests on the Sunday edition, but it's open forum this week. In fact, it's Sunday open forum, so you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here at Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine today, sir. It's I you know, in a way, Elliot, I'm kind of looking forward to hearing our guests, that is the Time for Awakening audience, and see what mix they can make for us in relationship to the interchange and exchange of ideals, information, and thoughts, so that we can be able to continue to develop. I think that's what I'm where I'm at right now for this day. You know, today is, you know, they pumped this up as Memorial Week weekend, you know, Memorial Day weekend, which, hey, Ellie, you know, it made me look up the definition of memorial. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, and I see it as something, especially a structure established to remind people of a person or event. And when I thought about that and, you know, knowing that we're going to be, you know, engaging with the audience tonight, it made me wonder to, you know, just to project to us, especially the Time for Awakening audience, why we're here, right? What's our memorial, right? And fortunately or unfortunately for me, I'm centered somewhat in Kemet or ancient Egypt as a visible reminder of a structure and a event that we as African people should memorialize and bring that forward, even though we can go even further back to, you know, the Sudan, to Ethiopia. But that's what I think that I wanted to just, you know, throw in the mix for tonight, thought that I'm having, since we're in open forum and listening to the audience about what I think we should memorialize.
You know, and I'm glad that you mentioned that because I did want to touch on something right in the beginning, but that's an excellent subject to talk about because, you know, you hear the folks running around, you hear people, if you turn on the television, you hear it, you know, talking about memorial, and it's all based on war and mm-hmm. remembering people that fought in wars for this country. But if you're just talking about our experiences here on the North American shores, our memorial should have nothing to do with any wars for this country. The memorials that we should have everything to do with our ancestors that fought for our freedom and had freedom in mind for our people. Our values, our principles, the things we memorialize should have nothing to do with Caucasians or European beliefs or their values.
That's true. That's true. And in that, you know, something that you had raised earlier before we went on that I think ties to the point that you were going to share with us, if I'm not mistaken, because our leadership should define the because of that, the Ma'afa, right, as Sister Marimbani coined the conceptual framework for that disruption. You know, when we, as we make this reconnection, we, you know, it that ethics that our leadership should have that reflects what our mission, a continuous mission, and that's why I want to use our, you know, to go to that ancient point to bring up about the point that you made, what we should be memorializing, those men and women and children who got on, you know, who came across different sections of the continent to eventually get on those ships that became that horrific moment. They are, that experience is unique to us that we should memorialize, right? We should have some symbol of, not as a degradating moment, but of some, what's that, celebratory moment when we look at ourselves now. But when we talk about our leadership, we should be looking at them saying, are you honoring that? And I know you wanted to bring up that piece about the blue, what is that, the blue code?
Yeah, that mattered. Mm-hmm. I mean, that mattered. That bill that was just signed, that mm-hmm. through with bipartisan support, that the CBC.
CBC, who's supposed to represent African, displaced Africans primarily, right?
Well,
as their constituents.
But then that goes to what you were saying. Where's the ethics? Where's the values? Where's the principles? Where's the dedication to your own people? Let me, for the listening audience that is not aware, because, you know, we talked on the Friday program about some of our people not having the information. And this system that we live under of white hegemony and white domination depends on black folks not having the proper information in their communities. If you turn on the radio, you'll hear Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, what's the other guy that used to take a, you know who I'm talking about. Yeah, but anyway, white conservative talking heads talk all types of issues dealing with white community all the time. And whenever they talk about issues dealing with you, it's always some type of slur or sometimes racial epithets even on their programs.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, they have these programs talking about issues. Now flip the script, and you don't have programs by and large in these cities talking about any important issues. You go to any city, any urban area, and turn on your radio and see what you find when you start looking for some type of talk, interesting conversation, issues and answers dealing with the black community. You don't get it. You get laughing and jokes and satires and Harveys, Steve Harveys, Joiners, and other Steve Harvey and Tom Joyner wannabes. It's the same crap. And then our people, when these issues come up, they know nothing about them. I did a little impromptu poll day on Saturday after the program Friday night with people coming into my place of business and asked them, were they aware of this Blue Lives Matter bill that flew through the Congress with bipartisan support? And they wasn't aware of it, Richard. They wasn't aware of it. They wasn't aware. Now, I want to, for the listening audience that is not aware and didn't hear the Friday's program and that might not be aware, I'm going to read just maybe a paragraph or two dealing with this bill. Then I want to play a clip of the Pennsylvania congressman of the that's a member of the CBC and what he said on the air on Saturday morning. One of our frequent callers called the program to question him, but he wasn't allowed on the program. But the host asked the question. He didn't get the bill right, but I'm quite sure this lawmaker knew exactly what he was talking about. But I want to play you his response. But before I play any response, I just want to kind of recap this bill that just flew through. Now, keep in mind, this bill started in 2016. It started in Louisiana. They had a partner bill in Kentucky and in Mississippi that partnered with this Blue Lives Matter bill. It finally started getting support. And usually with these bills, and it goes back to the beginnings of this United States, usually when one bill happens, just like a lot of those bills that was detrimental to our ancestors, started in Virginia and spread to the other colonies, and which eventually became states. The same thing now. One of them happens, and this bill originated in the southern states with Republican support. Now, all of a sudden, it reached the House and flew through with bipartisan support by black CBC members that claim that Republicans are their enemies, sworn enemies. But let me read this bill. Or a synopsis of this bill, according to a published report that was in The Intercept. On Wednesday, the House of Representatives passed the Protect and Serve Act of 2018 by a vote of 382-35. The act, a congressional Blue Lives Matter bill, would make it a federal crime to assault a police officer. The state version of the bill, which also has broad bipartisan support, goes even further, framing an attack on an officer as a federal hate crime. The bill exemplified the very worst sort of legislation, and at best is unnecessary and pernicious. The Protect and Serve Act would allow anyone who knowingly causes seriously bodily injury to a law enforcement officer to be imprisoned up to 10 years. And it creates even harsher penalties for other criminal acts against police. If a police officer were kidnapped, killed, or faced a threat to his life, then the perpetrator could get a much longer sentence, including and potentially life in prison. Mm. Now, that bill is a lot of wide latitude when you're talking mm-hmm. about some of these penalties. Now, I'll come back to that because I want to, before I even talk about that, let me go back to this thing, Richard, because they already have bills if you kill or assault a police officer. See, but this goes a little bit deeper. It says if a police officer were killed or kidnapped or face a threat to his life, then the perpetrator could get a longer sentence, even potentially get life in prison or imprisoned up to 10 years. A threat to his life. And that's the byline for any black person that comes in contact with police, and especially the ones that have been slain, both men, women, and children, about them feeling a threat to their life. Now, if you look at that, Richard, listen here. Especially now, just say you're part of a protest against police violence. And, you're charged with resisting arrest. Or even worse, if it's officers involved in it and somehow they get hurt. Then if you're arrested and part of a group that's protesting police violence against black folks and an officer manages to get hurt in the melee or even worse, then you could possibly be charged with the rest of the group, even though you're not a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you didn't intend to physically bodily harm, to do any bodily harm to an officer. If something happened in that melee, then you could be charged under this law. You could be charged with resisting arrest if you don't want the handcuffs on you and you try to break loose and strike an officer.
Don't even have to strike them. I mean, for the way some of these images that have been recorded and sent through, the new intelligence system called Facebook, all you had to do was just stand there and put your hands up. And you can be considered a threat.
Yeah,
the way they have brutalized young people.
This law gives wide latitude, a broad latitude in dealing with black folks. And keep in mind, the Democratic Party told CBC members about distancing themselves from Black Lives Matter. You remember that was discussed. Right. We read published reports. We had other folks on here, Cam Howard and others, that the legislative chair of NCOBRA that had been dealing with CBC members, that they have been told to distance themselves from Black Lives Matter. But they got bipartisan support by CBC members for this bill against their own community.
Mm.
Now, let me read this paragraph from the Black Agenda report in reference to the bill. Black Caucus sells out its constituents again, this time to the cops. And this is by Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report. The bigger the Congressional Black Caucus gets, the more it betrays its constituents. Last Wednesday, 3 out of every 4 members of the Black Caucus in the U.S. House voted to make assaults on police officers a federal hate crime. The Protect and Serve Act of 2018 is totally superfluous, since cops are already the most protected class in the nation. Nearly 1 million sworn officers inhabit a legal domination of their own, where immunity from prosecution or even for the most heinous crimes is the norm. As People for the American Way point out, all 50 states have laws that enhance penalties for people who commit offenses against law enforcement officers, including for homicide and assault. The federal laws already impose a life sentence or death penalty on persons convicted of first-degree murder of federal employees or officers, killing state or local law enforcement officers or other employees assisting with federal investigations, and killing officers in the U.S. courts. The Protect and Serve Act, which sailed through the U.S. House on a vote of 382-35, is a Blue Lives Matter bill that serves no other purpose than to give a giant middle finger to the Black Lives Matter movement, when the cops demand to know which side you're on, three quarters of the black caucus kiss the feet of the beast. We're on your side, boss. Now, I just want to read this list of CBC members, because all of them didn't vote for the bill. 28 out of the 43 did. I want to read the 28 names, then I'm going to play a couple of clips for you. 29, and three abstained or didn't vote, and that's just like a yes vote. Just like they twist it around to you when they come to the community and say, if you don't vote, you don't count, and things of that nature. So when they flip it the script on you and say you don't vote, you might as well vote for the other side. Well, it's the same thing with these guys. Let me read the names of the folks for the people that didn't hear the Friday's program. Alma Adams of North Carolina, Joyce Beattie of Ohio, Sanford Bishop of Georgia, Lisa Blunt Rochester of Delaware, C.K. Butterfield of North Carolina, Andre Carson of Indiana, Emmanuel Cleaver of Missouri, James Clyburn of South Carolina, Elijah Cummings of Maryland, Danny Davis of Illinois, Val Butler Demings of Florida, Keith Ellison of Minnesota, Dwight Evans of Pennsylvania, Marsha Fudge of Ohio, Al Green of Texas, Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas, Hakeem Jeffries of New York, Hank Johnson of Georgia, Robin Kelly of Illinois, Brenda Lawrence of Florida, Al Lawson of Florida, John Lewis of Georgia, Donald McCutcheon of Virginia, Gregory Meeks of New York, Bobby Rush of Illinois, David Scott of Georgia, Terry Sewell of Alabama, Bernie Thompson of Mississippi, and Mark Veazey of Texas. Three black caucus members did not even bother to vote, which is the same as a yay vote for the act. Those three names was Anthony Brown of Maryland, Cedric Richmond of Louisiana, and Frederica Wilson of Florida. Let me play a clip of the congressman from Philadelphia, whose name appears as one of the ones that voted for the bill, Dwight Evans. Let me play a clip of what he said on a terrestrial program here on Saturday morning, if I can get this thing cued right. And then I want to also play a clip because one of the men that voted for this bill also voted for the crime bill. I want to play what he said after he did what he did, because all of it is together. But first, let me play the representative from Pennsylvania, Dwight Evans, his response to a question that was posed by one of our listeners to Time for Awakening. Listen to this.
They got a telephone. Google it. By David P. Richmond. Oh. Google it about the history that we need to have today.
Congressman, I had gotten a call about the bill called the Blue Lives Bill.
Right.
Can you tell me what that is?
I'm not familiar with it. Somebody needs to tell me about it. Are you talking about in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, in D.C., I believe.
I'm not familiar with it. What did they say? What's it called again?
The Blue Lives Bill has something to do with the police and. Okay, I didn't get enough information.
That blue refers to the police. I don't know.
Yeah, give me some more information on it, because I'm not particularly familiar with that particular bill, and I'd be more than happy to research and find out an answer to it.
Okay.
Well, we know you will.
I will.
We do know it.
Y'all get it, and
thank
I'll find out.
Thank you so much for sharing.
We're home for the next week and a half.
You get a chance to eat some barbecue in peace.
Yeah, eat some barbecue. Yeah, that's how I get the check. Go to some barbecue, kiss some babies.
Oh, wow. That's
let me stop it right there. Now,
It's killing me.
Let me stop it right there. See, we didn't talk before on this program about these charlatans and black carcass. And I ain't no carcass, man. They're carcass, a dead body, not a live body, not a body that's helping black folks, a dead body. We didn't talk before about these black carcass members. This guy come on there, and now the host didn't get the word right. He said Blue Lives Bill. And then the other co-host in the background said it had something to do with the police. Now, if you're a lawmaker and you just voted for the bill on Wednesday, you know what the hell they're talking about. This man claimed, I don't know what you're talking about. Whoa, what is that? I'll try to get some more information. Dumbass, you just voted for the bill on Wednesday. See, these, Richard, I'm telling you, this stuff was hurting my head after the Friday's program. These people, they turn in the black community, and they don't have, you see what his interest is? I done told people before, all these black so-called misleadership class, all they want to do is walk around these communities with their chests out. I'm a congressman. I'm a representative. You hear this clown? I can't wait to get back to Philadelphia. I can eat some barbecue and then go around and kiss some babies.
Well, you know, he also voted on the increased military bill.
It don't surprise me. Listen, I'm going to the phones right after this. But keep in mind, I might play this the second hour. This is a man that's a black caucus member that voted for this bill. He don't even know what the hell it is. You heard his own words. This is not me accusing him. You heard his own words. Say, I don't know. Get me some more information. He talked to the host of the program to tell him to get him some more information on it.
Which they don't know.
And they didn't even know. See, that's what, you know what? That's a host of a program here in Philadelphia. And they wasn't even aware. See, Richard, this only goes to what I was saying, man. We don't have the information. Our people are not stupid or ignorant. These white folks with all that Telecommunications Act of 1994, they cut the legs out from under black talk radio. They did that for a reason. They making sure you don't have the right information. And some of these old charlatan leadership class, they play on that you don't have the information. Now, before I go to the phones, Richard, let me play with Bobby Rush, because Bobby Rush from Illinois also signed this Blue Lives Matter bill, along with the clown we just heard from. Let me play what he said 2 years ago when questioned by the TV host Tamarin Hall, young black girl who used to be on CNN. I think she got fired, or MSNBC. Let me play a clip of when she questioned him in reference to his support for the then crime bill. Listen to what he said, and also keep in mind what he just did. Listen to this, and then we're going to go to the phones.
Tamarin, it's my pleasure.
It always is great to talk to you. Let's put some perspective on what was happening. You were there 22 years ago. Do you believe the way the crime bill is being described now versus what was happening on the ground in some of that video, is it matching here?
Tamarin, let me start out with this. I am ashamed of my vote. I sincerely apologize to my God, apologize to my community, to my family. That was the worst vote, as I look back over the years, that I've taken since I've been in the Congress. And what happened with the crime bill and its implementation was that there was too much of a focus, too many resources on locking them up, but no resources on love and compassion. And as a result, we have devastated our communities, devastated our families, devastated our futures. And you can compare what happened with the crime bill and with the reaction. Well, let me just say this. Crack cocaine and the crime bill were the two worst issues, problems, catastrophes that the black community has suffered through in the last 50 years. I absolutely apologize for voting for that bill. I repudiate not the spirit, but the details of that bill. We have not accomplished anything other than further destruction of our communities.
So, Congressman, I then have to ask you, as you have mothers and fathers, I covered crime and reported in Chicago for 10 years, having the former president, hearing what you say now with this apology, is it enough, though? We were looking at a law that allowed for the prosecution of children 13 or older for certain crimes to prosecute them as an adult. There is no one who would doubt the sincerity of the apology you just presented. But on the campaign trail, you seem to hear the Clintons having it both ways, apologizing for the crime bill, but then pointing to some of the good, if that is even the word to use, that may have come out of it. Is that enough for the black community to hear an apology, sir?
No. And
yeah, you're right. No, it's not. No, it's not, Richard. You didn't hear no damn apology. You hear this guy say out of his own mouth, I'm sorry. My God, I'm sorry what I did. I need to apologize to my community. This has been devastating to our community. He said this is the worst thing that happened since crack cocaine, this crime bill. Now, keep in mind that both of those things were government implemented by this government that black folks is running around talking about, oh, thank you for your service. This government instituted those two things that man just spoke of. But the thing is, he went along with it, Richard. He voted for it and then turned around and say, I apologize to the community and to my God. I devastated my community. Okay.
27 years later.
Okay. Now, well, wait a minute. Okay. A man made a mistake. He should have stepped down then. No, he didn't. But he turned around and just voted for the Blue Lives Matter bill. What's his excuse now? Come on. Our people got to stop falling for this crap. We got to come up with solutions to get these people. These people are laying a wound to the black community. They've been hurting us. I want the folks to understand and listening audience. Become part of this discussion. Don't sit back. I know, I love our listening audience. I love the folks just sitting back. But I want you to get involved in the conversation this evening. We got to come up with solutions to get these people out from in front of us. They're hurting our community. They're hurting our children. They're devastating our families. Some of these people ain't no friend of the black community. And if you do have some lawmakers in there that are good people, are good at heart, they need to distance themselves from these clowns.
And that's why when we look at this here, you know, when we talk about memorializing, I say, you know, that we look at those symbols and those individuals, whether those who went through the Ma'afa or those who were able to build and put those monuments that we could still look at and ask the question, how did African genius create that? And to the point before you go to the callers, that how we have to look at our leadership, because you raised the point, Elliot, that we have to have some ethics, right? We have to be able to be clear of why we're doing what we're doing. And even that is written in our text of how we should be measuring our leaders if they're going to be leaders, or even measuring ourselves from an ethical perspective. Because in the Hussein, there is this concept called Saruj. And what I like about it, because what you're raising and what the listening audience and what we should be doing as African people is repairing and healing the world and making it a more beautiful and beneficial place. Because in that context, in that concept of Saruj, which is in the text, there's no mystery to it. It's in something that African people wrote long before America, Europe, Greece, Rome, and all those other Eurasian civilizations came to be. We said to raise up that which is in ruins, to repair that which is damaged, to rejoin that which is severed, to replenish that which is depleted, to strengthen that which is weakened, to set right that which is wrong, and to make flourish that which is insecure and undeveloped. And when we look at these CBC members and use those ethical principle statements that come out of our traditional African principle base that's recorded in our text that will help us get through that ma'afa, to that miserable moment of separation. That's what we should be aligning, and know that people like Rush or Dwight Evans, when they say the things that they say and the apologies that they apologize, don't make no sense to what they were supposed to be doing to be African people.
Wow. Let me go to the phones here and get a couple of these calls involved. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, my brother?
Hey, sir. How are you?
All right. Hey, Brother Richard. How you doing, Brother Richard?
All right, now.
Hey, brother, how's your mom coming along, Brother Richard?
She's holding on. She's holding on.
I'm glad to hear. I'm keeping in prayer. Praise be to Allah, Brother Richard. I'm glad, man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, man, I don't even know where to begin. First, just as a set aside, I guess I might as well, before I say anything, Ellen and Richard, I might as well say thank you for your service.
Yeah.
I'm being facetious, of course.
I know it.
I know our people and their misguidedness and their misinformationness. They'll be saying it on terrestrial radio tomorrow, as well as some of the hosts that's on there doing a musical interlude. They be interspersing it throughout the day about thank you for your service. And I said this on the show this past Friday, I think it was. I said we must be a glutton for punishment. I said that, and I got real deep on them. I said, I don't care what God you worship. I said, whether it's Islam, Judaism, Christianity, traditional Afrocentric religion, whether you call your God or Orisha, also Yahweh, Allah, you know, whatever higher force that, you know, you choose to call the creator and stuff. I said, he's going to continue to punish us as a people for our ignorance. I said, we look like a damn foolish black folks calling us some thank you for your service at a time when a sister who goes to a prestigious white school like Yale University, probably one of the top schools in America, and she falls asleep in a dormitory or in a lobby, wherever she fell asleep at, and she gets woken up with the law enforcement in her face with guns or whatever, telling her that she's what the hell she's doing there, and she paying tuition there, and yet we got the damn. I mean, think of what I'm saying, Richard and Elliot, how stupid we sound, and we had the audacity to say thank you for your service to the military for fighting to keep us free when a sister being accosted at her own school where she paying tuition at. You know, a black family in Oakland, California can't barbecue about some old white cracker calling the police on them because they look suspicious. They're out there barbecuing. And we talking about some thank you for your service. We must be out of our goddamn minds, man. I'm serious. I mean, I'm not just saying it to be smart, Elliot and Brother Richard. We must be out of our ever-loving minds to say something like that, man. We are crazy. You know, and I know a lot of it is because we don't have the right information, Brother Elliot. And I know we parrot what white folks say for the most part. We parrot with these ignorant, misguided black hosts who don't know their own history. We parrot. So it's all in a certain context. You know, so I understand the ignorance where it comes from, but we definitely need to change that paradigm. No doubt about that. And Elliot, see. When you played that clip of Bobby Rush and you played the one of Dwight Evans, see, it just proves, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, what I've told y'all before about the former president, Slick Willie, the so-called first black president. You know, I'm saying that in quotes now. I'm using the term president with him loosely and stuff. He, back on 2016, when his wife ran against Trump, when his wife dragged up the comments about when she called black young people super predators and Bill Clinton was under attack and stuff. And Clinton said right on the interview, and I told you and Richard in the town from the Wicked Listen audience, Clinton said that right out of his own mouth, and Bobby Rush pretty much confirmed it. Not that it's nothing new. It's everybody that got a brain know what happened. Bobby Rush pretty much confirmed it. Bill Clinton said, look, I know black people, you know, the African-American community angry with me for the crime, Bill. You know, Clinton went through his little BS about how he was sorry about that. He apologized. He didn't know the bill was going to be devastating to the black community. I mean, he went through all that charade. But the one thing Bill Clinton said, the one thing that cracker said, he told the truth. He says, black people mad with me. He says, but however, I didn't sign this bill by myself. He said, many black legislators, he said, many black members of Congress came to me and said, President Clinton, you got to sign this bill. We have got to do something about the black community, about crime in the black community. You got to start coming up with these hard, the lock, start locking people up, everything. I mean, Clinton laid it out. He wasn't lying, Ellen Richie. He laid it out and stuff like that. So when everything hit the fan, right, when you seen Bobby Rush with that bogus apology about he was sorry and everything like that, them Negroes, at them point, Ellen Richie, they should have been ran out of the black community on the rail at that point, because first response out of Negroes like Bobby Rush and this ilk, they said, well, when we went to the president, we didn't realize that the bill was going to be so draconian towards our community. So I'm saying to myself, what a damn ignorant Negro for you to say something like that. How the hell you going to go to any white man in America as a lawmaker, and you go, I don't care whether he's a white Democrat or a white Republican, he's still a white man. And knowing the history of how these people feel about our people, and you're going to tell this white man to up the ante, right, to double down on your people, and then when he doubled down on it with the three strikes you out, taking sisters off of financial aid without any kind of job training, you know, trying young children as adults, all this stuff, and you're going to sit there and say you didn't know it was going to be that devastating to the black community? You sound like a damn fool, Ellen Richard. You know what I'm saying? See, this is the kind of stuff that these Negroes play on us, man, and we have got to stop holding these Negroes accountable. That's why, if you notice, Brother Glenn Ford and Brother Bruce Dixon from BlackAgendaReport.com, they always got a foot up the black caucus behind, because they know them Negroes ain't nothing. They know all they do is sell our communities down the drain. And I've said this continually. The white man, whether it's Donald Trump, whether it's Bill Clinton, whomever, these devils could not do half. And I'm talking when you're talking about Clinton and Trump, you're talking on a federal level. But I don't care whether it's the city, state, or federal level. The white man power structure can operate the way it operates and do the devastation they do to our people on the three levels, city, state, and federal. And they didn't have help from them Negroes starting our people out, Brother Ellen Rich. And we need to face that reality. These Negroes, see, we know what the Black Caucus is doing. Don't think that for 1 minute it's not happening on the state level, and it's happening on the city level. These black city council people across them, not just Philadelphia, but across America, on the state level in Pennsylvania as well as around America, they voting with these crackers to do their people in, man. They voting for all kinds of legislation to destroy black people, to lock black people up, to keep black people from out of unions, to keep black people from getting sufficient job training, all the stuff that can help uplift the black community. In other words, Ellen Richard, like a modern-day Marshall Plan that was used on World War II to build back Europe after World War II. This is what the black community needs around the country. Them Negroes vote with them devils to keep our communities, even though we taxpaying citizens like white folks, what them Negroes vote for the legislation to keep our people from getting a modern-day Marshall Plan that would uplift the black community. You see what I'm saying, Ellen Richard?
I agree.
Them Negroes are part and party right there with them white folks voting to keep our people down and stuff, man. It ain't just the white man is doing our. We know the devil. We know the white man is the devil. He is who he is. But them Negroes are right there with them. And Bobby Rush and Dwight Evans and their ilk, they prove it. They're right there with them devils to do their people in, man. And them Negroes need to be exposed, ostracized, and ran the hell out of the black community. They know you're sugarcoating. They need to be ran the hell out of the black community. But think this the kick out of it, on Dwight Evans' thing. Brother Cody Anderson, who was the host of the show, Cody was so shocked by what happened. And this is why I want the time for the listeners to understand how he didn't even know. Like I said, the host of the show didn't even know. Cody, after the show, he called me up on the phone. And this was his exact words, Brother Ellen and Brother Richard, and to the time for the wicked listener audience that's listening around the country and hopefully around the world. Brother Cody said, well, Brother Joe, you said you mentioned to me off the air that John Lewis voted for that bill. I said, yes, he did. Cody's response was, how could him and Dwight vote for that bill? I said, Cody, that's a $1 million question. How the hell can any black person vote for a bill like that? Knowing that black people already face an uphill battle dealing with these police trying to get any kind of justice for themselves or their family members that's been victimized, brutalized, and killed by the police, it's a hell of an uphill battle as it is. Now, them Negroes going to sign a bill like that to make it even harder? And then you throw in the fact that they can charge you with a hate crime or whatever like that? I said, them Negroes need to be exposed. Cody was just, he was incredulous. He couldn't believe it and stuff, man. Now, I don't know whether Cody was just putting on the front for me. I don't know, but that was his response. He was shocked as anybody. He could not believe that Evans and John Lewis and him signed that bill. And like you said, Brother Elliot, in John Lewis' case, it's bad on so many fronts, because here was a man that got his brains beat the hell out by them racist crack the state troopers in Alabama. They beat that man's brains out. They beat that man into permanent brain damage, damn near stuff, you know? So for him to sign a bill like that, that's even worse, you know? And it just all points out to what the brother from Atlanta said when he called last week. It's time for John Lewis to go. Like I said, I feel for the brother, because what happened to him on that bridge was horrible. He got the police hit him with them nightsticks. Them nightsticks, that man bloody, as I don't know what, that man probably suffered permanent brain damage. But that being said, he's him standing around in the black community as a congressman. He is hurting our people and stuff, man. Because he needed to get out of here. He needed to go ahead and resign. And so his legacy and going out and get a strong black man or woman in there that's progressive, that's going to stand up and fight for our people. It's time for John Lewis to go. He's been around too long. All he's doing is he's become a hindrance to our community. It's time for him to go. As simple as that, man. But again, I'll close with this, Ellen Richard. Again, it just points out the bottom line. It just points out, and Bobby Rush pretty much said out of his own mouth, what them Negroes do behind the scenes. They vote for that, they militarize the police. They've been stuffed to get these police weapons that they know they're going to be used against their people. All them Negroes doing it. That's by our school system. That's by our schools all over America, whether it's Philadelphia, Detroit, or so forth and so on. That's by our schools are pitiful. Our kids go to schools with run-down water, lead in the schools, asbestos and stuff. We pay the same taxes that white folks pay. Yet white folks' schools look like college campuses, while our damn schools look like a damn hellhole. And because of people like Bobby Rush, Dwight Evans, and their ilk on the city, state, and federal level that continually sell our people down the drain. And as long as we keep on supporting these people, Ellen and Richard, we're going to continue to get what we get. It's like Einstein said, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and expect a different result. So as long as we keep voting for these kind of individuals, male and female, we're going to continue to get just what we get, Ellen and Richard. And that's the bottom line, man. I can't make it no more clear than that.
Joe, I want to thank you for your contribution, man.
Thank you, Brother Elliot. Thank you, Brother Richard.
Peace. Thank you. Yeah, before you go to the next call, Elliot, you know, the thing that I like to say, you know, it's for the soda, because, again, if people on mine are listening to this on mine, remember, we're supposed to also be recognizing who we're memorializing, who have died in this war against African people. And what Brother Joe raised was this point of the example of who isn't willing to die. And for this, you know, or be memorialized. And as an example, for Philadelphia, we have a state legislator that we know was the freedom fighter, and that's Dave Richardson. Do we have any monuments? Do we provide any events? And do we say that people like the congressman or the radio host or radio host owner, and those people in those different departments are supposed to create some kind of memorial for the warrior and the warriors? When we talk about people like Maddie Humphrey, who fought in Philadelphia, and just to give an example, and I know to our listening audience, they have people in their locale that they can say we should memorialize. That's where it begins. To move from what we see these individuals who are supporting our demise and should end. I just need to throw that out there.
Wow. I'm going to grab a couple more in here, Richard, then we take a break. Let's go to 478. 478?
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Hope it went well. Hope it's doing as best as they can this evening. I'm Kia. I've called before. About the bill, I heard about it, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, I don't know, maybe it was on your show, but I did kind of hear about it or saw it, and I think my congressperson is white, some Austin Stone or whatever, so I found out who it was. I was like, because I, like you said, most people don't know, they don't talk about it, they talk about Trump, that's why you have to be careful about that, it's all a disguise for the things that they really want to do, so when they keep talking about him with whoever, you really can't pay that much attention. Well, you can't really pay attention to it because that's not really what's going on. It's the behind-the-scenes stuff with these type of bills. And you should pay attention. These type of bills come up every now and then. I think last year was some other, I don't know if it was this bill or some other bill about health care, something they try to sneak through if you're not paying attention. They try to sneak them by you. So you have, and it's a lot to pay attention to. So hopefully if you know people, and you have to kind of get a team together and strategize. Okay, this is what we're going to do. somebody's going to go to the Republican stuff and listen to all that stuff locally. Someone's going to go to the Democratic stuff and listen to that publicly. Someone's going to go here. Someone's going to go there. Then you get back together and meet and decide, okay, this person said this, they said that, they say this. We believe this, that, and the other. Like the one in a million, but, you know, maybe one in ten because, you know, you're local. Your local area. But you really have to get serious about that, and we have to teach our children. And we have to learn the law, not just saying, oh, the law is this, but how to read the law, how to make the law. Because a lot of those people, as you can see by that person who signed the bill talking about they didn't know what it was, they're lazy. They don't read a whole bunch of stuff. If you know how to write a bill and can write it a certain way, you can give it to your congressperson and be like, I believe this. It's already prepared. Could you move this through? Nobody wants to do extra work. Nobody. Even as a teacher, I would much rather if the student write the recommendation and I read it and go, yep, that's you. Sign the paper.
Yeah, well, Kia, before we move on, I just want the listening audience and you to understand. It's more than just read the bill, sign the bill. These bills and most of these governmental laws is a smoking gun, not even a smoking gun, a loaded gun pointed at the heads of the black community. This is.
Oh, no, I understand that.
Let me finish.
Other people out writing laws. If we read the laws, understand the laws, we can write counteractive laws. That's what I'm saying. We could write counteractive laws. Because, I mean, do you know how to write a bill?
My point is this. You can't depend on these folks that's in here now to write any counteractive laws. They're going along with these things pointed right at the black community. And you're here. I played two clips.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is we have to find someone who's going to law school. There are a lot of law schools in this community. There's got to be some black person that can show us how to write a bill. There are pro bono. There is someone out there that can do this.
Okay.
And
we have to find them, and it's hard work. But we're dying. I mean, we don't. This is what we have to do. We have to be proactive. Like you said, we can't wait for them. We're dying. And that in the meantime, what you want to do? Because most of the time, the white people resist arrest. If you want to go start taking pictures and videos of white people getting arrested and go, look, officer, see how he resisted arrest to you? You need to give him those 10 years. I bet you they get mad about that. Because more white people seem to resist arrest than black people.
Thank you for your contribution, Kia.
Mm-hmm.
I like what Kia is saying because what it says and no, it's not simple. And you know, Elliot in Philadelphia, Wilson Good Jr., the son of the mayor who was a part of dropping the bomb on MOVE, was a council at large person. He got caught up too, but he was a council at large person. But one thing he did do that was open to the public. And not that this is a panacea, but I think what Sister Kier raised that we should look at as a solution base is that he opened to the public, like to be able to hold classes in city council that the public came to, that was during times where people who were working could be able to attend on how a bill is written. What I see the power and what Sister Kier is raising is those of us who recognize that, as you say, that this government is and its representatives, that, you know, and people who elect these representatives is out to kill us. Therefore, we need to be able to put laws in place, even if it doesn't go through the legislature, that we are going to uphold for our own survival. That to me is taking the self-aware. That's not making us a victim. That's not calling us a victim. That's taking a proactive strategy of self-governance. Because regardless whether we're under the governance of white domination, if we're going to be under self-governance, we're going to have to create rules, regulations, and trade amongst ourselves. And that, again, is what we were. Those warriors and warriors were actually symbols for us to do. That's why I see the power in Sister Key's thought
okay.
in relationship to that, doing people coming together and looking at different things that are going on and saying, what do we see as best to govern ourselves?
Let's go to 404. 404, are you with us?
Yeah. Can you hear me good?
I hear you now.
All right. I just wanted to, this is Lamont from Atlanta, and it felt good just a moment ago. I heard the caller, two callers ago, mention me, and that was an honor because I didn't say this the last time, but I'm really from Philadelphia, but been living in Atlanta for about 15 years. I come up on talk radio shows.
Gardner Road.
I come up on talk radio shows like Mary Mason and Sample with the sports show. And I just say all of that to say that ever since a child, and I was a teenager then, so ever since a child, I've been listening to Black Talk Radio, and I just wanted to let you know that you're doing a good job because this is one of the best programs that I've ever come across so far.
Well, Lamont, listen, we just try to exchange information, put things out there that our people need to know, and, you know, try to spur some type of movement.
I really like the information.
It's movement going on in all these cities, man, and I know it's movement going on where you are. And it just takes our people to get involved, man, to change our paradigm.
On this here Memorial Day, I wanted to shout out my uncle who was a war hero. He just passed away in his 90s. Henry Green resides out there in Germantown, and he died with a sour taste in his mouth because when it came down time for him later in life, where he began to suffer with certain kind of ailments due to injuries that occurred on the battlefield, especially in the Battle of the Bulges in World War II. A very pivotal battle, which helped us to win. And so when it came down time for him to get some treatment, they were willing to go as far as to say that we don't even have any record of you being in the military at all, so we're not going to service you. And so he was very torn. In his later years, he was very torn. He told me about it. He was very torn about that, that they wouldn't even acknowledge me. And not only am I a military veteran, but I'm an actual war hero who's also fought in two wars, also fighting in the Korean War. So he told me things about the military and kind of like put it in my mind before he passed away, how he felt about, you know, how they disregarded him and things like that.
Lamont, go ahead. Oh, go ahead, Richard.
No, I just was, just going to say, you know, I acknowledge, I can understand you said your uncle?
Yeah, my great uncle.
Your great uncle, because there's a lot of Africans who felt the same way, especially we talk about the Korean War, World War II, and World War I. Who came back, especially 2 and 1, came back to America and still had challenges as servicemen fighting for freedom overseas and recognizing they didn't have freedom here. And I can imagine your great uncle feeling, thinking a certain kind of way, providing that service and living through that experience of segregation and all. And then coming up, not even recognize that his contribution to this nation state, which is what we're talking about, right? African people not being recognized, that not only contribution, but their standing in this nation state.
Right.
Lamont, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your contribution, man.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Richard, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to go right back to the phones. We got 404 waiting, 267 waiting, 267. We'll be right up after the break, and a couple more calls, 602 and 646. We'll get to them right after the break. We're going to take a brief break. Time for awakening. We're in open forum this evening. Give us a call, at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're in open form this Sunday evening here in the city of Philadelphia at 8:17. Stevie Wonder, you haven't done nothing. Let's go back to the phones there. Let's go to 267. 267, get involved.
Yes, yes, yes. Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Yes, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
I will ask, like Brother Joey, how is the family? Mom good?
Yeah, I mean, she's doing, but it's one of those things, and I appreciate everybody's asking. It's one of those things, like, where I'm, I guess, in this moment of memorializing and recognizing memorial and events, you know, you just have to acknowledge what a person has done in their life to give you life and move forward. And again, I appreciate everybody's kind words and thoughts and prayers.
Yes, sir. You deserve to hear a response because people like you and they feel for you, man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brother Elliot, you did something. You look past the Hollywood appearance, the television, the newspaper, the suits that he or she wears, the car that they get, the privilege that they get with mailing, the traveling expenses, and this, the block party they give, or the parties that they give amongst each other. And you look past it, what makes a good politician? Legislation. Most people don't look at that. And that is what makes the person in leadership when he or she provides for their community, man, on a state level, which is local, or council level, which is local, and on a federal level. So what you did is make us understand and know that when a person is running for office locally, federally, on a state, is what is your position and what type of bills? See, because you have people who are on the House of Representatives or on the state level, federal level, and they're there, and they never pass any bill at all. They sign on the bill. And the ones who pass the legislation, you want to know what type of legislation they passed. Was it in our interest? Was it in somebody else's interest? And why would you sign on something that you don't know about? See, when Dave Richardson was there, people don't know this. The black Congress was divided because he just wouldn't sign on anything. And if at some point in time, when you're amongst them people and you have to take a principal stand, you sometimes become an enemy to them because you're not signing on. And the dangerous thing about it is somebody is good, they want to get rid of you. So you have to be exposed also. So some people say, we better go along with the crowd, man, because if you get ostracized, they're going to find somebody to run against you. And you say, you mean to tell me somebody's doing the good, you want them out? All that needs to be talked about. What is behind the suit, the tie, the skirt, the company car, the gas privileges, fine privileges? See, Seth Williams had to learn that. He's in jail. Fatah had to learn that. They're in jail. So what you did was important, which needs to be highlighted, because people said to me, oh, isn't he or she doing a great job? In their eyesight. But what you did is say, let's look behind the scenes, because it's the foundation that they stand on that makes them who and what they are and what they feel and what they're going to do. See, that if once I was elected, that would have been something. See, because I don't want to be compromised. You didn't send me to Harrisburg for me to be compromised. Oh, Tim, you went to fight for schools. Oh, Tim, you went to fight against gentrification. Don't get up there and say, oh, I got to sign on now. No. At that point, I wouldn't be keeping my promises. Or anybody, they wouldn't be keeping their promises. So if you have your community in your corner, they should be able to vote you back in because you're doing the right thing. Make the community aware of what you're dealing with and let them know who you're dealing with and what the consequences are, and you're not going to be compromised. That is a good lawmaker, a good legislator.
Tim, you know, listen, I understand what you're saying, and let me add this to what you're saying, that we have to come up, and especially in these bigger cities, larger cities, we have to come up with strong, and they're out there. They're out there in the community, and they get community support, but not in political, well, put it this way, not in the conventional political sense that we recognize. Right. We have to cultivate or persuade some of these younger people that are already out here in the community to understand the importance of representing their community moving forward. Because learning about how to deal with your community, learning about how to govern your community will last longer than this nation state that we're dealing with is ever going to last. These things are skills that you can use moving forward, whether you're here or abroad. So we really have to understand that it's time for us to come up. This party politics that our people have been playing is a dangerous game to our community. And it's not a game. It's dangerous to our community. And these folks, listen, you heard this man's own words. Now, that bill went through with bipartisan support. So you don't have any bill, especially in this political environment we're living in with Trump and seem like every day some type of stupid statement coming out of not only his mouth, his party's mouth. If you got a bill that flies through with bipartisan support, you remember that bill. You remember it. Right. And it just happened Wednesday. This man's on a terrestrial radio program on Saturday. The host questions him in reference to it, and he has no clue to what the host is talking about. And then tells the host, well, if you get me some more information, maybe I can talk about it. What the hell? I think something's backwards there. You're supposed to get the information so our people can talk about it. See, this man's own words, and he's not alone. I play Bobby Rush's own comments. These people's own words let the black community know that you need to get rid of these people, and we need to have the accurate information so we know how to act.
Well, I'm going to say this to you, Elliot. Do you think if you and I were around and if Adam Clinton Powell was living, don't you know the 65 pieces of legislation that he passed, he was proud of and he knew every last one?
Well, I would assume that anybody, if you, I,
because
Richard, anybody.
All the bills he passed was the war on poverty, education, CCP camps. They were worthy bills, see, because he knew them because they were worthy. Somebody forgot what they did or didn't know. They knew it was a worthy bill, Elliot.
Listen, either the man's a liar or he's just totally inept and stupid. Either way, if he's a liar or an ep, he needs to be out. To come on to black community, and that's a black station, to come on a black station and you got your constituents listening to you and you have no clue, even the host, neither host even knew about it. But the second, the co-host said, well, I think the bill has something to do with the police. And then he kept saying, oh, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Did it come out of Washington, D.C.? I'm saying, what? I mean, I just couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Well, Elliot,
so I had to play. I had to get a copy of what he said and play it so everybody that's listening on Time for Awakening can hear their CBC, their black carcass members in action.
Do you remember this, Elliot? The man or woman that you send to the state, the city, or the federal, the word is, can they be compromised? That's what you don't want nobody compromised. That's the word.
Brother Tim, thank you for your contribution, man.
Indeed. All right, now take care now.
Right. Let's go to 602.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard.
How are you?
Yeah, Brother Marcus here. You know, I want to just piggyback on what Joe said earlier. Joe is correct. You know, in order for America to function, our people got to be out of their minds. It is essential for us to be out of our minds. And it's evident that the religious leaders and the political leaders don't sold us out. I mean, we have one clone here, a prominent preacher in Memphis, A.R. Williams. He's on the pulpit teaching black people, oh, you are cursed. And black people sit down there and we gobble it up. You know, I mean, this is sick. You know, we got to be sick. And these clowns up there, the CBC, we just got to amplify it and expose them. Just expose them for what they are. You know what I'm saying? They are buffoons, they are clowns, they are jellyback weak Negroes. That's what they are. Now, as it's Memorial Day, what I want to memorialize, who I want to memorialize today, is the 20,000 black people that died at the devil's, the devil's punch bowl in Nazareth, Natchez, Mississippi, after the Civil War. 20,000 black men, women, and children died there in that internment camp by the Union soldiers. These were Union soldiers doing this to black people. And I was, you know, I was just searching because I was planning to go down to Nazareth to do a little business. And I came across this information and I was shocked. You know, I said, wow, in America, you know, they talk about concentration camp, you know, but the concentration camp was right down there in that devil's punch bowl. 20,000 black men, women, and children died there. I don't think they have a plaque. I don't think they have a memorial there for those people and those souls crying out every day. So these things we have to amplify and let our people know. You know, it's this, you know, these people not going to change. This cracker ain't going to change. And he do these things to us because he has power. He's a megalomaniac. He's a homicidal maniac. He's a pathological liar. You know, he ain't going to change. These are his characteristics. The only way to deal with him is like how the Chinese deal with him. Say, look, if I catch you too close to me, you die. You know what I'm saying? If I see you have eyes on my natural resources and my people, you die. So we're going to have to get power. These people, they don't care. And they are turning it up. They're amping it up. You see, because they realize this thing is falling apart. You see, their civilization is going. You see, and they're pulling out all the stops. But they can't stop it, brother. They can't stop what's coming, you know what I'm saying? We're going to steamroll it behind, you know what I'm saying? And our people, conditions are going to force us to respond. See, a lot of us don't want to respond. We want to sit there on the fence. But they say, Garvey said, when all else fail to organize the people, conditions will. And the conditions are going to get so bad, it's going to force our people to make some moves. You know, I see the poverty. I never know that so much poverty is in Mississippi. You know, I mean, when I went to Mississippi, I was shocked. You see the condition where black people living in America, in Mississippi. I was like, man, you know. So anyway, you keep on doing what you're doing. I also would like to salute the black soldiers in World War II, that all they killed was crackers. World War II. One brother told me, he said, brother, they paid me to go and they kill the crackers. He said, man, what? You know, so look, I salute the black soldier. You take care, good brothers. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Marcus.
All right.
You know, Brother Marcus said that. That reminds me of a joke, and you might remember this, Richard. It was on Sanford and Son. Fred was telling Lamont about his great uncle that was in the service. And he said that he came up with the slogan, don't fire until you see the whites. And Lamont told him, he said, no, it goes, don't fire till you see the whites of their eyes. And he said, well, my uncle didn't wait that long. I used to like that saying for the son. So I remember that just reminded me when,
I mean, and somebody, you know, in reviewing somebody, World War One veterans, that was their, that's how they felt. Like this, you know, it's not largely recorded, but they were saying this was their opportunity to be able to, one, to have a gun, and then two, to be able to, it wasn't retaliation. I don't want to put it in that kind of context. It wasn't reactive to be able to actually do what they can do there that they and get away with it, what they couldn't do here for the reasons of being humiliated here and then the repercussions of actually implementing their manhood rights here. They gave them a gun, and that was the military's fear all the way up to the Second World War. That if they gave Negroes guns, that they one would be enjoying killing white folks.
Yeah, you
know, and that goes back to the Revolutionary War. George Washington didn't want to give, even though they didn't want to give Africans who was willing to fight, didn't want to give them guns. So you know, I could that court captured, you know, that's that Fred Samuels Stanford captured, and with Brother Marcus Rich just captured that mindset that exists, and we should acknowledge it.
You know, Marcus mentioned about the and also the call out of Atlanta Lamont mentioned about his uncle. Let me make mention of this because I had a longtime customer. He's passed on now. He was 94 when he passed. But he had a brother. And he used to talk about his brother. His brother was killed in Port Chicago. I think that was right outside San Francisco. And I'm going to read a caption of what happened there. And he mentioned that his brother's wife at the time, and he had two sons, but the sons, they were young then, didn't get anything in reference to his death, Richard. But let me read, just in case our listening audience might not be aware, let me tell you what happened or read to you or just a brief paragraph or two what happened in Port Chicago. Port Chicago was a disaster that was a munitions explosion. Now, it was black soldiers that was loading these munitions on to go overseas during World War II. But it was dangerous how they were loading them. Now, let me read these two paragraphs. Port Chicago's disaster was a deadly munitions explosion that occurred on July 17th, 1944 at Port Chicago Naval Magazine in Port Chicago, California. The munitions detonated while being loaded onto a cargo vessel bound for the Pacific Theater of Operations, killing 320 sailors and civilians and injuring 390 others. The overwhelming majority of the dead were African-American sailors. Unsafe conditions inspired hundreds of servicemen to refuse to load munitions. The act known as the Port Chicago Mutiny, 50 men called the Port Chicago 50 were convicted of mutiny and sentenced to 15 years in prison and hard labor, as well as a dishonorable discharge. 47 of the 50 were released in January 1946. The remaining three served additional months in prison. That's your government. For these people that feel allegiance to this damn government, that's your government at work. Putting black soldiers in totally unsafe conditions when you had 50 men that said, this is dangerous. We're not loading these munitions. They put them in prison and served for 15 years at hard labor. But once the explosion happened and almost 600 men were killed, then all of a sudden they release them from jail. It said the remaining three served additional months. It don't say how many additional months. That's your government at work. That's the reward that black soldiers got for fighting for this damn government. Loading unsafe, and they know it was unsafe. You had all these black soldiers loading them. Where was the whites Where was the white soldiers at down in that the hull of that cargo vessel loading live munitions like that? Fifty men stood up and said, "We're not doing this. This is dangerous." And they got rewarded by the government for 15 years in prison, hard labor, and a dishonorable discharge. But then after the men were killed, 47 were released in January of 1946 after the explosion in July of 1944, killed all of those men and injured 390 others. Yeah, okay. I just figured I'd read that, you know, based on what some of the men.
It's what we should be doing is honoring from our conscious memory, from our memorializing those who deal with that, what we said, the ethical position, deal with Saruge.
Wow. Let's go to 502. Let's go to 502. 502?
502? Yes, greetings, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. This is Sister Sunny.
How are you?
How are you doing now?
Fine, thanks. I wanted to just add a little bit of maybe a continental news, so to say, regarding Memorial, the so-called Memorial Day. Just to remind everybody that there were a number, thousands of Africans were rounded up by the evil British Empire from the continent to go and fight in White War II. Mm-hmm. One of these men was my grandfather, my father's father. And when I was growing up, that was kind of seen as an honorable thing, I guess, the same as here. And that's why I'm bringing it up, because really it doesn't matter where our people are. We seem to be running into the same problem, which is deliberate by the evil empires of America and everywhere else, the British and so on, the evil white men. So the family was excited about it. You know, we didn't know a whole lot about it. My grandfather never talked about it. And this is where I say we need to really teach. We need to learn how to speak. And I'm glad we have this forum where we can voice our opinions like you're doing. And really, people need to know the truth as to what's going on and how our people are being inflicted and affected by these situations. So we never had, my grandfather never, he was our favorite, but he never said anything to anybody about what had happened. But the reason I'm bringing it up is that he ended up being supposedly promoted to sergeant, and that was a big deal. There's a book called The Thousand Men of Africa that my brother reminded me of about 3 years ago, and I kind of got excited, and I thought, well, I better get a hold of it because he's listed in that book. When I received the book, it was not like when I was a little girl growing up in our village, when I had, you know, we would hear the story and it sounded like something good, you know, because we were always lied to and fooled into believing that whatever the white man does is the best thing for us. But I just had this sad feeling when I received that book. It's no longer in publication, but I was able to get a used copy for myself and for my brother. He was excited and I was not, because I tell you what, I looked in the book, there's a picture of my grandfather with another African gentleman and this white devil between them. And my immediate reaction was, did he know what he was being taken to Europe for? And I know he didn't. Yeah. You know, like any other, all the other Africans are just, often these white people come and then they just round us up or offer us something that we think is going to be good for us. And then we're never recognized for the efforts that we put into it. Mm-hmm. You know, we may die. We're often put under the worst conditions. You just mentioned that, Brother Elliot. You know, typically we're going to do the worst jobs, you know, compared to that. And then we're going to be underpaid and, you know, not compensated. And then we're not going to have any benefits until we die like these white people get, which is why they continue to have generational income, is because they get benefits until people die. You know, our people suffer diseases and all kinds of things from these white wars, and never recognizing the psychological trauma. Because I look back now as an adult and I say, you know what? My grandfather was suffering. The only reason that our family stayed intact was because my grandmother, she literally shielded him and just kept the family going. Grandpa was there. He read the Bible every day, of course, which is probably what they taught him when he was in Europe fighting. And but he wasn't associating with anybody else except my grandmother. You know, the importance of really the family being intact and everybody pitching in to support whoever's gone through that type of trauma. And I'm saying this because, you know, we keep thinking these devils are going to recognize us as human beings. They have not changed. They do not see us. It doesn't matter how educated we are, how hard we work. They still see us as subhuman, not worthy of any type of respect or appropriate compensation when it comes to work. So I just thought I'd share this because, you know, a lot of Africans on the continent as well were rounded up during some of these white wars, and nobody talks about it really. We don't hear much about it. And I think the sad thing is that as they continue right now, you know, our people are the ones that have less job opportunities, you know, we're poorer than everybody else. And I think they do it deliberately to prepare the men for war. Anytime they start, like, now this nut in the nut house, the way he talks, he's going to make everybody angry. And when they go to war, it's going to be our people going, not because they love this country necessarily. I think a lot of them go because that's how they're going to make the income. They don't they don't have jobs. They don't have, you know, their families are suffering. And this is one of the ways they feel maybe they can get some income out of it. And there's the one job that they're going to be welcomed into because they're going to be abused more and not paid enough, but they'll be fulfilling the agenda. So I just thought I'd share that. And by the way, the book I got, I still have not read that book. I felt so much pain when I saw my grandfather because I knew, I thought, you know what, he had no clue why he was being rounded up for by this evil British Empire. And on top of that, he had to suffer whatever went on because I cannot imagine what they were doing to Africans, what they continue to do to Africans when they take them to war. Then come back home and keep quiet about it because you do not want your family to suffer along with you, you know. And so this is the part that I just wanted to highlight on this discussion. Thank you very much for this. This is an excellent program. So I just want to thank both of you for continuing to educate us. I'll mute myself. Thank you.
Sister Sonny, before you leave us.
Yes, Brother Elliot.
And believe me, this question is facetious. You said that your grandfather was taken by the British Empire to Europe to fight?
More than him. There's a book called A Thousand Men of Africa. So there were over thousands of Africans on the continent, African men who were taken to fight white wars. And my grandfather was one of them.
Well, Sister Dasani, that's all going to change now because Harry has married Meghan Markle. So all of that's going to change.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I can't go there, y'all. I'm sorry.
I'm sure. You know, that's another memory that I don't even want. I cannot. I'll tell you what. I do not even want to. See, this is, I don't know how people do, how everybody deals with being conscious, so to say, because, well, you know, I cannot stand the sight of white people. I don't want to see them. I don't want to deal with them. And I know there are certain situations where I have to do it. I'm just trying to get myself out of, you know, back to Africa right now is what I'm doing because I feel there is no solution in the U.S. It's going to be 30 years next year since I've been in America. And the little pain I feel, I have much more respect for the ancestors who have suffered tremendous amounts and the generations that have lived in this evil country. And I still think there is hope. trust me, the Bible is what's killing them, because those people like Brother Marcus believe they're cursed or whatever they're believing now, and the priests who are making tons of money out of them to keep them subdued and just dead, basically. You know, they're amongst the living dead. They're just dead, some of them. But the good news is there's some who are still truly African. I honestly believe that on the continent we have more Africans who are closer to the original African than we have anywhere else, even though they're also being poisoned by the system. But there's some who are just in the villages doing their thing. Nobody's, that's where I'm going to hide for now. And I know maybe that's being unrealistic, but I have got to get away. I cannot, I mean, it's just too much.
Well, you know, you'll be hearing somebody else following your tracks, watching.
You're welcome, and the sun is always shining down there for the reason. That's how I look at it. I think they'll never allow us to do it. And trust me, I have been a professional in the medical field in this country, and I have worked hard. I always had questions in my mind when I started seeing what they're doing as far as, you know, if you're a patient who's African or black, we start you with this type of medication for your blood pressure. If you're white, we start this kind of medication. And my question was always, why the difference? Is it truly really because there's a difference, or is it because we're being given something that's toxic to us? And sure enough, later on, you know, you start finding out that these people have their own system where they, you know, they're talking about diet and eating healthy and doing all. They're not going through this conventional medical system where everybody's being given drugs. They know, these people know what's going on. And then you find out that, no, that medicine that our people is being given, because, you know, they have to have the water pill or whatever it is, this is the most dangerous pill you can give to anybody. So they're not even giving it to their people. So, I mean, for me, this is a war that I cannot sit back. After what I've seen, and I got a chance to even work in South Africa, a neighboring country, and saw what the white devils would do to our people in South Africa. Now, this is in 1996, when I went back and worked for about 6 years. They would do some surgeries with no anesthesia on our people, because then they would say, well, watch the Zulu, they're not going to complain. It's going to be okay. We're going to tie their tubes. And this is all about fertility and controlling population, but we're not going to use anything. I had never, ever seen anything like that. And so this is a war that's ongoing on all fronts, and we cannot afford to not talk about it, for one thing. We're going to have to separate and disconnect ourselves from these white devils, including any of our people who are possessed. Especially if they're not willing to get help from maybe some African healers, we're going to need lots of them, is how I look at it. You know, this is a painful situation, because a few of our people who are doing well refuse to even acknowledge that we've got problems, because as long as they've got food on their tables, then they forget not only the whole community, not only the whole African community, but they need their own family members. I mean, these people get educated. As long as they're getting money, they don't only leave the black community. They leave their own family members and let them starve. This is how sick this whole thing is. And we can no longer afford to sit back and say, well, you know, the CDC or whoever it is will take care of us. They're not going to do anything. They're just feeding their own stomachs. You know, I'm sorry I'm getting kind of emotional, because it's just been a painful journey. I've had years of seeing things happen to our people and trying to, you know, and I didn't even know we had forums like this. So I was really thrilled at the beginning of the year when I ran into your program and a couple of other programs, because we don't get to hear about those. We're not going to hear them on CNN and whoever else is being recognized by these people, because they don't want our people to know the truth. They know if once we know the truth, things are going to change. And that's going to happen sooner than later, I believe. Well, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to air out my my frustrations about the situation, but I truly believe the ancestors will pull us out of this, but we have to inform our people.
Yes, I fully agree with what you just said, and I thank you for your call, sister, and call again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Peace. Richard, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue. A great call, by the way, too. I just want to make mention of that before we take a break. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We got a couple callers on hold, and Richard, your buddy is on hold, and we're going to get to him.
It's a good thing I don't have to go to the plantation tomorrow.
We're going to get to him right after the break. You could get involved, too, in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
The courts and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. cop to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing for yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society. Only at that juncture in human society, where it is split between those who have and those who ain't got.
I throw a Molotov cocktail at the precinct. You know how we think. Organize the hood under our ching banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And them hitting cameras in the streetlight watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common needs. And all my comrades is ready, we just spreading the seed.
Black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate?
No more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects. Material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in their back than fire back. We tired of that, corporations hiring blacks. Denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my raps. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathing it. It's more than just fucking believing it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's C-Lo for push-ups now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
The average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
Welcome back. Time for an awakening. It's a Sunday evening here at 9 o'clock in the city of Philadelphia. We're in open forum this evening. You can get involved in the conversation by giving us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to 404. 404.
Hey, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, man. How y'all doing?
How are you, brother? How you feeling?
Hey, I'm still learning, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, man, I appreciate that you share the information I sent to y'all, man. Okay?
Thank you,
sir. That's what I do, man. Okay, that bill 5698. And I don't know how many people on the line, but see what the deal is, Elliot. The information out there now. And so I challenge everybody that call in or people listening, I send them the bill and how they voted. If they can't find it, use your smartphone and tell everybody you know about what's going on with these devils, man. I call every radio station that I know of, black radio station, okay, particularly the one in Atlanta, and let them know I messed up John Lewis and the rest of these clowns sold us out, man, okay? That bill that they wrote in that omnibus bill in 1996, we had no smartphone then. We got them now, okay? Elliot, I appreciate you doing what you by reading that, man. But that's what I do. Okay, I don't just like to be just talk about it. When that brother that called at y'all show 2 weeks ago and told us about it. Okay, and I say, well, let me see what this brother talking about. See, that's what I do. So okay. When he gave the number of that bill, I used my smartphone and looked it up, man. Okay, that's what we got to do, man. See, I blame that I call them coon aggression or coon. Okay. And see, I blame that on us, Elliot, the so-called voters. I blame that on me and everybody else, man, for letting these clowns get away with this stuff, man. Because it looks like to me, Elliot, I hate to say this, man, but them niggas have put us back in slavery, man. We won't even know it, man. You know what I'm talking about, Elliot Richard? Huh?
Hey.
I hate to be hyperbolic, man, but them niggas have put us back in slavery, man.
I mean, you know, Brother and Elliot, it's you know, that's why we have to be constantly vigilant about what we're about. That's, I mean, and I don't know if that makes sense. We have to be vigilant about what we're about, because what you just said, I don't see that far from being the truth.
See, like my sister that asked how Bill get made, I remember from my, what's that show used to come on, Conjunction Junction, the bill, all it go in committee, a senator or a congressman, if they want to get a bill, they'll sit down and go to their committee, okay? And then when they get the committee, they'll vote on it, and then that's when they, all of them put their bills in it, and they go to committee, they'll vote on it. If they vote, yeah, that we want to make it, take it further, then they'll go to the regular Congress, put it up there for them to vote. And then after the Congress vote on it, House of Representatives vote on it, then the Senate vote on it. And if they vote yeah on it, then it go to the president to sign. So I'm hoping that enough of us wake up, but we can stop it before it gets to the Senate, man. That's why I tell everybody that's listening, get the copy of the bill and tell your folk, man. Okay, we like to talk about every damn thing else. Everybody can bump their gum. You say something about Kanye or whatever, everybody go to talking. So we get the, what they say, you get the government you deserve, man. It's on us, man. Okay? And I appreciate that brother giving me to that number, that bill, man. And I appreciate y'all spreading it. That's what we got to do, man, to stop this stuff in the track, man. I, like Joe said, the main one I'm shocked about is old damn John Lewis, man. Okay, he got busted in the head by a state trooper on the Edward Pettus Bridge. He signed for it, man.
You said you're shocked?
Huh?
You said you were shocked?
Yeah, for him to vote for it, man.
Well, he made a public statement not too long ago that he said whenever he sees a police officer, he stops him and says, thank you for your service. Now, he said that out of his own mouth. This was a public statement he made not too long ago. I think Brother Otis out of Newport News mentioned it also. But I heard him when he said it. So, you know, I don't... It don't surprise me about any of these guys.
I called a radio show in Chicago and talked to the host about it. That Negro gonna tell me, talking about that bill was voted for white guys that shoot police. I said, look, bro, every damn bill they make, y'all know it's for us.
Wait a minute. He said what?
Huh? Talking about they made that bill for case some white guy shot a police. I said, dude, come on, man. You on that radio station misrepresenting the people, man. Every bill they write, Elliot, you know that's against for us, okay? And Elliot, I'm going to tell you something. I done been to gun shows, man, okay? And just watch them, see what's going on. They give black people background check, and them devils, they don't even background check them, man. They just go ahead and just give them, sell them the doggone weapon, man, okay? But this, I'm like you, Elliot. When I first read that and saw who all these Negroes that voted on that, man, I got a freaking headache, man, okay? But I want to thank Al C. Hastings, and by the way, y'all, he is in a fraternity. Y'all always like to bust the fraternities in the head. He is in a frat. Al C. Hastings and Frederica Wilson, that's the lady that reminded me of that wear the cowboy hat, and she was the one that with that black soldier that got killed in Nigeria or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
She a fan for the mm-hmm. folk. And my sister Maxine Waters, okay? Them the real three that stood up, man. And notice, she in California and the other two in Florida, okay? But Elliot, man, this is a damn shame, man. That's why, y'all, I'm telling everybody I know what's going on, but this bill, and see, I show people, look it up for yourself, okay? And once I saw that, Elliot, man, believe me, I'm on this station in Atlanta, man. Okay, this right here in the belly of the beast, okay? And for Hank Johnson to vote for it, he'll sell out, too, because he's the one that took Cynthia McKinney's spot, okay? That Hank Johnson Negro, man. I'm so damn mad about this here, man. Man, Elliot, you don't know. You think you pissed off. Buddy, these folks got to go, man.
And, you know, you raise an interesting point in relationship to the host from Chicago, their response, because mm-hmm. even if he believes that is true,
right.
He has to come from the perspective of black people being on a black talk radio and talking to black people, that any law that is made, even if it is made for white folks, it, like everything else, it will affect us differently. Yep. And we have to be constantly vigilant about how it affects us, regardless who else it was made for. So even exportation laws can affect us. If you got a housing director talking about we immigrants, at what point they say, okay, if you Negroes is immigrants, get out of here. Because they have said that before.
Yep. but hey, man, I'm going to keep on getting that information out. If everybody, please share it, man. Okay, if they can't put it up on their phone, just email me at WBWB52, and I'll send them the bill and how they voted, man. Okay, we got them on record, okay? And I learned from Brother Ralph, and I heard Joe and them talk about how bad the CBC is. I say, well, this time, I'm going to see for myself. And it's written in black and white how these Negroes voted, man. And they got to go, all of them. All the ones that voted, yeah, for this. You see, what's going to happen is they're going to take one of their family members, I don't like to talk up stuff, to get stopped by the police, to get busted in the head by them same police. Because remember all this dude, Brian Gumbo, that was on sports on NBC? Remember Brian Gumbo? Mm-hmm. Remember that brother? Mm-hmm. Okay, he thought he was all white.
Yeah, till his son. I think his son got
there you go, Elliot. Mm-hmm. His son got beat up by the police. Okay? And he was on TV crying. Now he see what it is to be black. So each one of them coons that blows for Elliot. I hate to talk up stuff, but they got to, somebody in their family member got to get stopped by the police one time, and then they go, this going to be blood on their hands or whatever, man. But this is a darn shame, man. Them niggas sold us out, man. And that's why I'm calling every radio station I can, anybody I talk to, I'm showing them the bill, man. I leave my time for the family, man. This still pissing me off more and more, okay? Because these folks got to go, man. Simply that. Their time is up. They got to go before we go, Elliot. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you, Wes.
Peace and blessings. Hey, Richard, man, I find you on Facebook, man, but you ain't too common, man.
Huh? Say it again.
Just inbox me on Facebook, man, so I know who you are, so when I see you stuff, all right?
Yes, sir.
You said
my name is Wesley Boyd, and I got a picture of Africa. You see me. I've seen y'all stuff, man.
You said there's a bunch of Richards on there, huh?
Yeah, a bunch of Richards, and you know his last name. I don't want to put him out there.
You got to stay incognito, you know.
Yeah, you got to at least come up with an African name like Ocean or something. Peace and blessing, man. I holler at y'all, man. Family, do what y'all doing. Everybody is listening. Tell your folk, man. I don't care where y'all at. If y'all on the moon, man, let everybody know what's going on with these devils, man. They got to go.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Peace and blessings.
Take care, man.
he said it's, boy, I'm telling you. Oh, Richard.
Let's they go. Work. I love it. You know, Elliot, in this moment of memorializing, if I can get a couple of minutes, I'm going through this book now, Slavery at Sea, Terror, Sex, and Sickness in the Middle Passage by Sawanda Masaki, I think is her name. And in this particular section is dealing with, and I was thinking of this, who I called earlier, mm-hmm. but dealing with, women who were placed on these slave ships that we should recognize the heroism and the horror that we experienced through the Middle Passage. And the heroism is in this, this paragraph just that comes out of it in this chapter of Blood Memories. Although physically armed by the time the surprise attack on the woman and the two men made up the band of insurgent captives on the Robert, making it easier for sailors to quickly thwart their rebellious efforts. Counter-resistance the ship crewmen waged against the detected insurgents proved damaging, not only against the attempted outbreak, but also to its subsequent perpetrators. The ship captain, referred to as Harding, began enforcing punishment against two bondmen actively involved. ordering several seamen to whip and scarify them only. Three other captives accused of serving as abettors but not actors were sentenced to death. Before the execution, an enforcer to enforce greater dehumanization for their insubordinate act. Now, they consider becoming free insubordinate, right? They were made to first eat the heart and liver of the one of them, the sailor they killed. The sentence imposed upon the bondswoman was equally as unforgiving as that as her male counterpart. Employing the frequent use of public display of brutality, she was hoisted by the thumbs, whipped and slashed with knives before the other slaves till she died. Flogged, cut, and murdered in view of the entire ship, the triple punishment enacted on this woman's flesh served as a mechanism of reform and deterrence for others. The appearance of wounds and permanent scars on her body reinforced how tortured usually minds the killing of people by inflicting pain, the sensory equivalent of death, substituting prolonged mock execution for execution. And I say that, you know, Elliot, I thought that hopefully making a transition to the next caller, because how we have to translate these moments of memorializing of structures and events, because these events that would come to, seems to me, what we talk about when we even talk about the Blue Lives Matter bill, is what we're really talking about is what Baba Wade Nobles calls Sekou, right? Which is the process of illuminating the human spirit. And because that's what we do, right? Mm-hmm. We are in this experience, in spite of the torture, the torment, the degradation, whether, as the sister mentioned about her great-grandfather, or the brother mentioned about his great-uncle, those torment, those tiny slices of men who fought and not recognized, thinking that, you know, not even knowing why, and if they know why, going and then not being recognized, it's just slices that torment, but our human spirit to be African, right?
Yeah.
To propels us that in spite of that, we do not give up our humanity. And I think that our experience should be memorialized as not just a recognition, a memorable moment for us, but for all of humanity of what it is to be human. Because anybody and everybody cannot go through this kind of torment day after day. We got to look after bills, fight within ourselves to be able to make sure that we're informed enough in order to understand the type of reaction that is placed on us in order to prevent us from living out what it is should be a life, not a hardship.
You said it all, Brother Richard.
Wow.
But the callers will continue to add to this because that's what gives this power.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Well. As always, I'm here to clean up the show, to be able to put it all in its proper perspective. To my brother Richard, yes, I'm sir. Glad to hear that you don't have to go see the daddy tomorrow. That the daddy has allowed you another day of rest and relaxation. Let's stand up and clap and bow to the daddy for giving us a little something. But, you know, in all seriousness, and all jokey jokes too, you know, Elliot, when you started off this show today, in regards to that caucus member or whatever the heck you wanted to call them, it just goes to show, number one, that none of them are worth a damn. But it also goes to show you that 99.9% of the radio show hosts on terrestrial radio ain't worth a damn either.
Wow. Yeah, you know what? Go ahead. Go ahead.
The truth of the matter is they don't want to ask the right questions because they are scared that the daddy may punish them. So what they do is they move forward with the agenda or whatever the guest is supposed to put forward in checking jobs and fool all of people to believe that things are good when things are absolutely terrible. Now, how could you shucking job with a Negro talking about he gonna kiss babies and eat pork ribs?
Well,
he didn't say
how pork.
You gonna encourage him to eat the pig?
He didn't say pork ribs. He just said barbecue.
But we know what he's gonna eat. He gonna eat some pork ribs, and he gonna smack his gums and do all of those things, kiss the baby, shucking jobs and all of that.
I mean, you know, listen,
seem
Jay,
like he tore something.
Hold on, I'm gonna let you finish. I'm gonna let you finish your thought. But I just, you know, when I heard that, I just couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Yes, you did. You believed it because you know that's what the Negro was gonna say. And
well,
the evidence that you believed it was because your constituency at your place of business basically said the same damn thing. Because they ain't know nothing about it. That just goes to show you that 90% of our people don't even know how they're getting screwed over.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And they don't even think they're being screwed over. They just feel as though, you know, they're going along to get along. Because they may have a job. You know, they got to do certain things. And, you know, they're able to have certain things. But in the reality, they just getting screwed over every which day they can turn by those who's supposed to be representing them to keep their kids out of jail. And if you think about it, based on the way this whole process is going, that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. People are going to wind up in positions to where, as if your child goes out there and protests or go out there and do anything, and the cops decide, well, we're going to arrest him, and he go into the jailhouse, and he open up his mouth, and he say something stupid, or he don't look a certain way, or he don't respond the certain way, now they going to throw a charge on you.
Yeah, well, the door
is
open.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. The door is open to do that now.
Yeah. All because some Negro don't have the decency, nor the courage, nor the moral fiber to do the right thing. Because he's scared of what? He's scared that daddy gonna take whatever little bit he has away. But in the process, you giving your own child away, or you giving away your niece or your nephew, or you giving away somebody that you have a responsibility and a duty to see him have a better life. So in the process, you have somebody like that dumb, no good, stinking, filthy, old fart John Lewis. He'll say, well, white people are now going to be held accountable. Now, you know and I know that ain't no Urugu ever going to be held accountable in the same fashion that a black man is. I mean, you got them killing people and getting out on bail. Mm. I mean, it just becomes more and more ridiculous whenever you hear some black man trying to say, we're going to equate some sort of behavior between the races. That's garbage. Because we're never going to be treated in the same fashion like the Yoruba will. It's not beneficial to no one. You know? But then again, the constituency, when it comes around and you get a candidate that articulated, they're going to laugh at them. Because they don't understand it. So you could be sitting down in your place of business, educating them, and they'll walk out your business and it'll go past them because they don't understand the ramifications of what's being done to them. Because after you say it, who's supposedly the militant Negro, the so-called conscious black man, a.k.a. the whole stepster, and all of these other things, it just goes on because he's going to go back to business at hand just serving the daddy. He may not want to, in essence, be the daddy or anything like that. He's just going about the business of serving the daddy because his perspective in life is he got to be what? A good Negro.
Yeah,
in order
to
be a good Negro, he got to behave a certain way. So who won't come after him? The daddy.
You know what, Jay, what you're saying reminds me of a piece I just heard Baba Wade Nobles speak
yep.
on. And he called it conceptual incarceration.
Yep.
And that struck me. Conceptual incarceration. Because in my double consciousness, and as we speak to it and we find the information, I can't understand, Elliot, how, and I know you asked me to do the same thing once I do a tour, and I know it's true. How is it that we can have so many people be so, it's one thing that you don't believe in it. It's another thing you say you don't even know.
I know.
Hey, let me tell you something. I was having a conversation with my daughter one day, and I was explaining to her the nature and the behavior of the white man towards African women. Now, you know, that's a hell of a thing to have a discussion with your child about. And then once you had the discussion, time goes by and, you know, you have them do a little bit of reading. You have them do certain things. But then all of a sudden they get in a position and a place where they start to forget the lesson that you taught them for some reason because they get a little comfortable. And what happens is, you know, sometimes we let it pass because we don't want to really deal with that confrontation. But let me tell you something. And I tell this to all parents that got kids. Once you give them that lecture on the relationship between that no good, stinking, filthy Yoruba and African women, and they don't abide by it, then you really gotta play rough. You gotta play hard, and you gotta put your foot down. Because if you don't, they'll turn around and slip up and bring one of those dogs around you. And when you bring one of those dogs around you, and then you gotta act like you're a stinking, raving maniac, and they look at you and they start to look at you a little different, like, Lord have mercy, I didn't know he was that big of a fool. You know what I mean? But you shouldn't know I was that big of a fool because I told you in the beginning. You know what I mean? You slipped up and I told you again. Nastier. Now you make the mistake of bringing that filth around. You got to get, that's the position that we in. We forget the lessons that we are taught about our oppressor and allow ourselves to get off balance and be around our enemy to the point to where as we become clouded and the enemy is able to sneak right in and get you under their filthy mitts. And this is the thing that politicians do continuously. How it is that we in the black community can constantly and continuously forgive men like John Lewis just because that Negro got beat upside his head 50 years ago. So what are you saying now that the beating is finally setting in? Then if that's the case, what should you do? Kick him out of office, right? You're supposed to put him out like an old dog or old horse or something like that, the pasture. What are you keeping him around doing the things that he's doing that's not moving you forward but moving you backwards? And you're not supposed to say that. You're not supposed to critique his behavior. But in the process, every chance and opportunity that he gets to do some good, the harm that he does is worse and more beneficial than the good that he will ever do. Because now he could do something good, maybe, but the process is something in his place that's going to hurt us for years and years to come. Just like if you think about it, the crime bill is still in effect today, right?
Yes,
so now, if the crime bill is still in effect today, and now you add on this Blue Lives Matter bill on
that it was the worst thing he did. But then 4, 5, or 6 years later, the Negro go and participate in something that's just as bad.
I know.
What do that say to you? What do that say to you? Who is the problem? It's us that's the problem, because you don't hold him accountable. And unfortunately, terrestrial radio is not a place to hold him accountable, because there's no one on terrestrial radio that there is in place to stand up against and hold accountable him accountable. No one. The only thing maybe closest to hold him accountable is probably Carl Nelson's show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not his thing. His thing is more dealing with a certain consciousness. But if you're talking about all of these characters that talk about politics and all of the other, you know, nonsense, none of them are going to hold them accountable. Imagine you going on Perm Daddy's show and saying what I'm saying about John Lewis. That nigga will start crying. That nigga will start screaming. That nigga will do some of the most amazing buck dancing and shuffling that he could ever do to counterbalance what one would say about that filthy, stinking, no good John Lewis. You know what I mean? And then all of his members of that's listening to his show will be in essence saying, how could you talk about a man that done been busted upside his head? How could you talk about a man that done did so much? And the sadness in all of it boils down to is, how is John Lewis at this time and at this date helping the black community?
I would raise another perspective, Jay. How is it that the people that's put John Lewis in office, whether he got the money, whether he got hit upside the head, in that area, there must be enough people, and you just talked about those, and we, you know, and it boggles my mind, that will see that the things he has supported ain't to their best interest.
Because they don't know it's not for their best interest, Richie. They don't have a clear
and is that a problem?
That what he's doing is harmless to them. Yeah.
Is that a problem?
But
to
then
all
they'll
of
talk
us?
About going out there to vote. Look, man.
Thank you so much.
90% of the people that go out there and vote don't even know what the hell they're voting for. Somebody told them to go vote under the auspice that this person, if they get in office, they're going to do something for your black behind. And they don't do nothing for you. Name recognition or some sort of recognition by association or something of that nature. But the reality is, you think about all of the black people in Philadelphia that the so-called establishment of black leaders have said to put into office. How many of them really do anything for the constituency? Can you name them?
No.
Elliot?
I mean,
no.
Okay. So basically, you're being led by individuals to place yourself in a position to be cuckooed by some charlatans. You know what I mean? They could maybe get some sort of kickback.
Those same people will say that they are not their leaders, because if you start moving away from the base of people who benefit from them, who get patronage jobs or who gets government jobs or government related contracts, whether they're informed or not, they will still, you know, those people they'll say, well, that's my friend, I party with them. That's my friend. Yep. I grew up with him. That's yep. my boy. I went to, you know, I held out with him. Therefore vote for him regardless what bill is in front of him, because they ain't paying attention to that.
I got a better one for you. On Tuesday morning, they're going to say, I had some pork ribs with that pork chop chicken eater. Or whatever. You know what I mean? They gonna say, well, I had something. I had something good. You know what I mean? I saw him kissing babies. I saw him doing this. I saw him doing that. So the reality boiled down to is that we are in a position as a people to constantly be misinformed, to be used and abused. And in the process, what did I say Friday? We get no sovereignty. We get nothing in return for giving them our vote, because those are the same leaders that assist and go along with what happened to you, gentrification. So now hereby, once your community becomes gentrified, then you displace. And then his behind gets kicked out of office and, you know, hopefully got enough time to get a pension. I mean, the one thing that does happen is they get a decent pension. So, I mean, you know, the bottom line is it's a hell of a game being played on us that we don't even understand that's being played, because we don't know the games. We don't know the terms of the game. We don't know how to play the game. We just basically go along to get along and not to offend your rules.
But, you know,
I hope that we get something that's crumbs.
I have to say, though, Jay, and Elliot, I think that when you say, you know, what we would like to do here on Time for Awakening, it kind of pulls testament to that, because look at the audience that is listening to us. We're informed. Look at the audience that is bringing forth the information. We're culturally relevant. Look at the audience that we're engaging with. We are exchanging information about what people like John Lewis or Dwight Evans are doing. But I think that also when we listen to each other, like Brother Marcus says, we have to amplify our position, because if our position is sovereignty, we have to amplify that.
Let me ask you a question, and let's try to be as honest as we can.
Yeah.
Truthfully, both of you, myself included. Out of your listening audience, if you ask them how many out of, let's say, 100 of our listeners, how many of you think would not vote for these filthy, stinking, no good politicians? Out of 100, how many of you think honestly would not vote?
Well, put it this way. I'm going to give our people the benefit of the doubt. If the majority of our people had the right information, I don't think a lot of them would vote for some of these people.
No, I totally disagree with you. Mm. I totally disagree with you. You know why I totally disagree with you? Because there is a perception within the black community, I'm sorry to say it, that in order to solve our problems and to place ourselves in a better position, that the only way that's going to happen is with the vote. And the only reason I say that, and the only reason I make this assumption and this analysis, is based on our community. Because with all that done happened in our communities over the last 30 or 40 years, how is it that if we didn't feel that way, we have let our whole community basically be transported into others' hands? Because we believe in the system of voting and all of those things to keep us moving forward. Because if you think about us moving forward and the discussion of moving forward, what is it always predicated on? It's always predicated on the vote. Now, do we even take advantage of the vote in the nation that we should? No. Because if we did, and this is the most puzzling thing out of all of it, if we did, what would we have control of in our community? School boards, assembly seats, district leader seats, community board seats. We would have all of those things in place and be in control of it. But what we do is we get caught up in voting for, as one would say, the top instead of the lower. So one would go vote for a congressman or a senator or the president, but all of the other things that come into play to be able to really run, you know, politics, for some reason, we let that pass. We let others take control of that, because I don't know if we really understand the concept of how to be able to govern and move forward a neighborhood or community. I think we don't have it.
I think we do, I agree with you. Wait a minute. Well, I agree with you, Jay, that if you look at where we are, all the indicators give that impression. All the real live indicators give the impression that you say, if we look at it, what they do. But what you asked was first for how much of the audience that we represent, possibly if we voted as a block, and even we say we're 100 in a sea of 10,000. So you got to look at the proportional relationship here too. And when we look at who's actually participating, if what Elliot said is true, that we wouldn't participate in voting for those individuals, those other in that 10,000, they are. And that's where the rub comes in at. But I think it's a conversation we have to continue to keep sifting through, because it was times when we did use the environment, the electoral process, the consumer-based relationships that we had with each other, whether it was because of segregation or because we created our own towns, that historical moment actually shows that it could be and it had been done. Now, when we talk about right now and we talk about us, it's some things we have to do. And that's what Amos Wilson is saying, that we can't always look at a mature system. There's some things we have to do, which we may have to have some uncomfortable conversations about within ourselves, because if you don't do internal politics and trade, you can't do external politics and trade, because you're going to have to be trading and politicking with other people who ain't looking out for your best interests.
Well, I'll say this. I can definitely agree with you, but I tell you this. If Elliot said he was going to run for political office, Lord have mercy, there ain't no telling what may happen. You see Negroes come out of the woodwork attacking Elliot. You see Negroes talking all sorts of nonsense, talking about things that he said 15 years ago about that filthy sticking Yerugal. And here it is, the man that he's up against and running against done did more dastardly and dirty things against the community than one could imagine. And you know what the sad thing is? The dirty, dastardly deed individual would win before Elliot would, because of the simple fact that black folks do not want to confront white folks.
Now wait a minute, Jay. Let me say something. Let me throw this in reference to what you just said before we move on. It just say if you, for example, was running in Harlem for a seat, and you was running against whoever the incumbent is up there, then they'd dig up all types of stuff which Jay did in the past. And you know who would help them dig it up? It's the person financing their campaigns, which is so-called Jewish lobby, and other Caucasians would funnel money into your opponent to make sure that you're slammed or slandered, or what they consider a slam or slander. And that's the propaganda of it. See, we don't.
But you know, in all honesty, I don't think, other than maybe slapping a couple of Yerugals, cursing a couple of Yerugals out, you know, my record ain't bad. I ain't been I ain't got no child molested scandals. I got nothing that's really bad, other than being a free speaking hater of the cracker. So I mean, you know, that would be part of the entertainment of just going along with the whole notion of the campaign, pointing out to Negroes and upsetting Negroes for being bootlickers. I think it would be a lot of fun.
But you
I would have to accept the screw
But you said a critical point, because politics, electoral politics, and politics in general, we were taught was warfare without guns. It's a difference between being in politics and being in the context of warfare without guns, and being in politics and as entertainment. And true that if it's entertainment, which we do see that we can have, they talking about a Kanye West being president, have a Barack Obama being president. Well, that's entertainment, because black people thought they were going to benefit from that office in relationship to goods, services, and policy, which they didn't, which would have been
they never confronted white folks. They never said nothing as one would deem alleged by white folks. They ain't never gonna confront the Jew on the manner in which he treat our people. They're never gonna confront white people. They've never done all of those things. But you know, the one thing that you have to be is, in those situations, is securing yourself. And another thing is, your money got to be right. If your money ain't right and you ain't securing yourself, you really, in all honesty, wasting your time, because they could cut you off at the knees. They could do whatever they want to. You know what I mean? But it would be fun and entertaining, because just imagine me on the television station talking about Yorugus and all the dastardly, dirty, low-down things that they done and said. They say the man is a complete nudity. But then there'll be a couple of people who say, damn, you know, he right. Let me think about that. Why don't you investigate this? You know what I mean? I mean, imagine me and John Lewis being in the campaign against one another. Oh, man, I think black folks would hate my guts. You know why they would hate my guts? Because I would point out all of the things that this man has done that is good, and all of the things that he's doing bad, and I would just ask the people, weigh what he's doing now compared to what he's done in the past, and what is his agenda moving forward, and this is what I think is the solution.
Well,
you don't have that.
Jay, before we move on, let me tell you this. I think most of our people see these things as you do, because if you notice, in a lot of these elections, most of the people don't even vote, especially our people in these local, especially the young people. They're not even involved in the process, because they see it as backwards, it's dirty, it's all about money and graft. They don't really. I could see if you had overwhelming support and a lot of people are voting in these local elections, especially in the black community. Most of the black community is not even voting in these elections. They're not.
No, I agree with you. Because, you know, in all truthfulness, Elliot, black people don't even understand politics on the level that they say they do.
Well,
they
I would
really
agree with
don't.
That. I would
and
agree with that.
And that's the truth of the matter. They just are told to go vote for this person because that person will do this, that person will do that. But in the process, when it's all said and done, that person don't do nothing. All he do is make himself and those that finance his project and his thing of being in elected office richer, give them certain access to certain things, and in hopes, and listen to this, and I'll leave on this note, in hopes that at some point in time, they will reward him for selling the community out. And in the process, when it's all said and done, like in Harlem, the community is gone and they get nothing. Because you know something? You don't even hear that much now about Charlie Rangel. You don't even hear nothing about him. And I don't know if he done left New York. I don't know if he's still in Harlem. But, you know, he'll show up within the next 3 months in August when they have the Harlem Week. He'll show up then. He'll show up around election time, and he'll just basically go about the business at hand of, you know, having people come out there to vote. But you know what the crazy thing is? He didn't even have a person that he mentored into moving forward in his position. So that just goes to show you, he really did nothing but stay in office for 44 years to make himself rich and his friends rich, and those are his friends, they dying off because one of his right-hand men just died yesterday. Danny Farrell. He died yesterday. So Percy Sutton dead. The next one that may die that was in the Big Four, I think, was David Dinkins. And, you know, David Dinkins, he's on his last leg like Charlie. But there's no young guard like they were in place to continue that so-called black legacy of politicians in Harlem. But listen, have a good week. And Richard, I hope your mother does well this week. I hope that you enjoy yourself tomorrow and you have you a hamburger, a Frank. You know what I mean? Leave them ribs alone. Leave that up to Elliot. You know what I mean? Because I don't know. Elliot may be doing some barbecue tomorrow because the shop may be closed. And, you know, we'll just see you on Friday. Hopefully, Bushytail.
Okay,
brothers.
All right. Take it. We're going to take a brief break, last break before the end of the program. And you know what? Before we break, Richard, I want to, just for the sake of our listening audience and for the ones that might not have heard, if I can find that clip, I want to replay them both so we can kind of get the gravity of things that was talked about this evening. Let me see if I can get this together here. Hold on.
We need to have today.
Congressman, I had gotten a call about the bill called the Blue Lives Bill.
Right.
Can you tell me what that is?
I'm not familiar with it. Somebody needs to tell me about it. Were you talking about in Washington, D.C.?
In D.C., I believe.
I'm not familiar with
it. What
did they say? What's it called again?
The Blue Lives Bill has something to do with the police and okay. I didn't get enough information.
That blue refers to the police. I don't know.
Yeah, give me some more information on it because I'm not particularly familiar with that particular bill, and I'd be more than happy to research and find out an answer to it.
Okay.
Well, we know you will.
I will.
We do know it.
Y'all get it, and
thank
I'll find out.
Thank you so much for sharing.
We're home for the next week and a half.
Oh, you get a chance to eat some barbecue in peace.
Yeah, eat some barbecue. Yeah, that's how I get the check. Go do some barbecue, kiss some babies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he want them to do the research, Richard. You do the research, and then I can come back with something.
He's going to come back with something or nothing.
Oh, I thought that was his job to be doing that. Mm-hmm. Now, I played that, and let me replay this clip from Bobby Rush being interviewed by Tamarin Hall.
Tamarin, it's my pleasure.
It always is great to talk to you. Let's put some perspective on what was happening. You were there 22 years ago. Do you believe the way the crime bill is being described now versus what was happening on the ground in some of that video, is it matching here?
Chairman, let me start out with this. I am ashamed of my vote. I sincerely apologize to my God, apologize to my community, to my family. That was the worst vote, as I look back over the years, that I've taken since I've been in the Congress. And what happened with the crime bill and its implementation was that there was too much of a focus, too many resources on locking them up, but no resources on love and compassion. And as a result, we have devastated our communities, devastated our families, devastated our futures. And you can compare what happened with the crime bill and with the reaction Well, let me just say this. Crack cocaine and the crime bill were the two worst issues, problems, catastrophes that the black community has suffered through in the last 50 years. We absolutely apologize for voting for that bill. I repudiate not the spirit, but the details of that bill. We have not accomplished anything other than further destruction of our communities.
So, Congressman, I then have to ask you, as you have mothers and fathers, I covered crime and reported in Chicago for 10 years, having the former president, hearing what you say now with this apology, is it enough, though? We were looking at a law that allowed for the prosecution of children 13 or older for certain crimes to prosecute them as an adult. There is no one who would doubt the sincerity of the apology you just presented. But on the campaign trail, you seem to hear the Clintons having it both ways, apologizing for the crime bill, but then pointing to some of the good, if that is even the word to use, that may have come out of it. Is that enough for the black community to hear an apology, sir?
No. And
you're listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Sundays at 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be wrecked, if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
Help me, please.
Jesus.
I'm not wondering at all about them.
What
I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we wind things down this evening, Richard, interesting discussion and perspective on what we're up against, but there are solutions out there. We've talked about several of them on the program. I was in conversation earlier today with Cam Howard, the legislative chair of NCOBRA, and we were talking about this exact thing. You know, it's kind of ironic, Richard, that Cam is down there lobbying a supposed black representation to support reparations and can barely get, the last time I checked, 23 or 24. But then they got overwhelming support by those same legislators of the CBC. Overwhelming support for a Blue Lives Matter bill. So, you know we're at war, and we've been at war since we've been here. But it's kind of obvious that we got collaborators in that war against our people that look just like us. So we got to devise strategies to not only deal with the open enemy, but the covert enemy. We got to develop strategies to deal with them. Political strategies, and we have people out there that's doing it. Cam is, it's a part of two independent political black organizations, the Black is Back Coalition with Omawale Ishiteli, and also Universal African People's Party under Zaki Baruti. He's a part of both of those organizations. You got 1 million conscious and conscientious black voters and contributors. You have organizations out there, the candidate school that the Black is Back Coalition have been doing. I think they did one in Chicago. They did a couple down in Florida, teaching conscious young blacks not only on how to run a campaign, how to run a successful campaign, to deal with the planks and provisions of the party. The planks and provisions are clear. We've talked about them on the program. I think it's about 18 or 17 of them. The 1 million conscientious and conscious black voters have about 19 at last check planks. All of them deal directly with the black community and things that we face every day. So the options are out there that we can utilize. And it's clear that those options can work. Look at Chokwe Antar Lumumba. He's a perfect example of somebody that came out from among those type of environments that we're talking about. He came up here to Philadelphia at the invitation when we invited him to come up to 1 million conscientious and conscious black voters and contributors meeting up here. And now he's heading his city down there in Jackson, Mississippi, that his father once was the mayor of. So it's clear that these things can be utilized in one, especially in proportion areas that we overwhelmingly populate.
There you go.
Proportional representation, Zaki Baruti calls it. So it's clear that we can utilize this, but we don't have to utilize, because in the past, if you look at some of these localities, even larger cities where we do hold the sway as far as proportional representation. You have leadership that have went in there and have worked at the behest of other folks, help gentrify their neighborhoods, don't bring any business opportunities to their neighborhoods or no business investment, bring no jobs, bring nothing, but take from the neighborhood and then walk around like the clip we heard a few minutes ago. He can't wait to eat some barbecue and kiss some babies.
It's there.
Yeah. Richard, we'll be looking forward to next week and in the coming weeks. Next week, the lineup starts out, as always, on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. with African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting dialogue with Brother Oshie on the program. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on Time for Awakening at 6 to 8 later on that afternoon. Brother Jihad Ahmed and Acres of Diamonds will be on Time for Awakening. That's Jihad Ahmed, Acres of Diamonds, from 6 to 8 and from 8 to 9. The first season is over, but they're doing a recap of the programs from the first season. It's Let's Buy Black365.com Connect with Sister Nataki and Brother Sabar. Their program is 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Always interesting conversation with Dr. Rogers on the program. One of the fastest growing programs on Time for Awakening, Dr. William Rogers and Black Reality Think Tank. On Wednesday, Sister POC is back with Revive from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Friday, Time for Awakening is back at 8 o'clock from 8 to 10. Time for Awakening. Then on Saturday is Sports Day with SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Richard, that winds things down. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion with the listening audience as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Oh,
save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.